from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, handing down a ruling on the Louisiana Abortion Clinic Regulation Act, which has many saying it is now clear the court has 5 liberals and 4 constitutionalists. We'll talk about it with Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry, whose office argued the case before the Supreme Court. And we may also hear from Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who says this should be a wake-up call. And FRC's Vice President for Policy, Travis Weber, will join me in studio with a look at today's court opinion on the June medical case, as well as the Open Society case, another opinion handed down by the court today. Also, on Friday, President Trump issued an executive order protecting public statues and monuments. The order also covers churches and religious property from violent attacks. Former Congressman and retired Army Colonel Alan West says those who are attacking these monuments are not only lawless, they're mindless as well. He's here to explain. And I thought we were told that all mail-in balloting would not call election results into question because of voter fraud. Well, New Jersey apparently didn't get that memo. At the end of last week, the Attorney General of New Jersey brought criminal charges against 4 men in what has been described as widespread fraud, voter intimidation, and ballot theft in the May 12th all mail-in balloting municipal election in Paterson, New Jersey. Mark Hemingway, senior writer at Real Clear Investigations, is here with more on that disturbing case. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. If you're on Parler, it's at T. Perkins as well. And by the way, tonight, a special update from Washington, D.C. At 8 p.m. Eastern, Arise and Stand. We'll have a number of members of Congress here to talk about events that have been unfolding in the last month, including court decisions handed down today. And last week, we'll have Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, chairman of the Republican Study Committee, chairman of the Values Action Team in the House, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler. Dr. Ben Carson will join us with an update on the fight against the coronavirus. Also, Carter Conlon will be with us to lead us in praying for the nation. We'll also have General Boykin. And Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati, will be with us. And a host of others will be joining us tonight for Arise and Stand. Now is not a time to shrink back in fear. Now is not a time to go silent. Now is time to arise and stand. To find out more how you can register and be a part of tonight's event, 8 p.m. Eastern time, go to TonyPerkins.com and register right now. All right, the Supreme Court continues to shock the country with its rulings. The latest 5-4 decision strikes down Louisiana's law requiring abortionists to have hospital admitting privileges. In fact, this decision, this 5-4 decision in which the Chief Justice Roberts joins with the other 4 liberals on the court, has some, such as the Justice Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas, saying that, once again, the court is beyond the bounds of the Constitution in the cases of abortion. Joining me now to talk more about this is the Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry, whose office argued the Russo or the June medical case before the Supreme Court. General Landry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for having me this afternoon.
Now, I have to imagine this is very disappointing because I know that you and your office put a lot of work in presenting this law that was duly passed by the Louisiana legislature, signed by the governor, defending this law before the Supreme Court.
Yeah, you know what else is disappointing is I spent a lot of time defending Justice Roberts over the past, up until today, because I had read his dissent in the Texas case, watched when he was not in the majority, right, when Justice Kennedy was there. And so there was a solid left 5 votes on the court. And, you know, what he confirmed for me today is he was just joining the rest of those elitists and that basically he's hoodwinked the American people. It is completely disappointing. It's what undermines democracy and the credibility of our Constitution when justices say one thing when the court is in one position and then say another when it is not. And that's exactly what happened today.
Well, speaking of Chief Justice Roberts, he stated that he believed that the whole woman's health case was wrongly decided, as was in the dissent of that opinion just 4 years ago. He said that again today, which struck down Texas's pro-life protections. Yet the Chief Justice voted to strike down Louisiana's law, claiming he was bound to follow that precedent, even though it was incorrect. I mean, how does that foster a sense of confidence in our court system when the Chief Justice himself says it was wrong, but I'm going to stick with it?
Well, what's hypocritical about that statement is that if he would be consistent in upholding stare decisis throughout just this term, then maybe there would be some credibility to what the justice said. But he has struck down or overruled stare decisis in past decisions just this year alone. So he basically is treating stare decisis as a buffet. When it suits him, he picks it, and when it doesn't, he discards it. And so that's the problem, Tony, is that these judges don't have or are really not being consistent. He claims that he would have held the Texas law to be constitutional, but when an opportunity presents itself, which is actually different from Texas, he doesn't uphold it. And he hides behind stare decisis. That's just not. It's unfortunate, and it's disingenuous. Is what the chief is being. He's being disingenuous. And unfortunately, I mean, the only path I see forward is to be able to reelect the president and hope that we get another pick. I mean, other than that, the court is just going to remain in this 5-4 pattern until such time.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, the Attorney General of my home state of Louisiana. Jeff Landry on the phone with me from Louisiana. It was his office, his department, that argued before the Supreme Court on the June medical case, which, as we've talked about before on the program, the origins of which was a law that I first passed back in the late 90s, which simply put the abortion clinics, which at that time were completely unregulated, put them into the same category of law as the ambulatory surgical centers. And Attorney General Landry, this is, I guess, one encouraging thing I saw in this case with Justice Gorsuch returning back to the side of common sense after last week's decision in the Bostock case. In this particular case, in his dissent, he noted that this law is a completely common sense law. In fact, making the same argument I made when I first passed the legislation, he said all other outpatient surgical centers in the state have to abide by it, including LASIK eye surgery centers and steroid injection sites. The abortion industry simply wanted and got a pass from a basic law that promotes patient safety. I mean, this is about the well-being and safety of women. Why? Why do we continually see abortion clinics get a pass by the courts?
Because of Justice Roberts. Because Justice Roberts today basically chose abortion over women's health. It's what he did. Unfortunately, I mean, I know no other way than to just call it out, Tony. It is completely disappointing. I thought better of the chief. I thought that he recognized that when a law... Again, it's hard for me to square the chief's decision today because of his past decisions and past writings. Unless what he did in the past was rhetoric, unless he was disingenuous in his writings, he can. And look, legal scholars will argue that the chief today, you know, said one thing, but he has proven that the Supreme Court gets its cake and eat it too, and gets to eat it too, and they can speak out of both sides of their mouth. This law was about ensuring women's health and protection. But the court today said that the most important thing above a woman or a girl's health is an abortion. That's what they spoke to today. That is just, there's no way you can dissect that into anything other than exactly that particular statement. You break it down by saying that abortion supersedes the health of any woman or girl.
Well, Justice Thomas kind of brings that out in his dissent where he says, you know, because we lack jurisdiction and our abortion jurisprudence finds no basis in the Constitution, I respectfully dissent. I mean, you go back and this whole thing is made up. It's made up and it was found in the shadows of the Constitution, and they continue to play make-believe. But it's not surprising. They did it last week when it came to the issue of gender. And I think this fosters a lack of respect because they're showing a lack of respect for the Constitution. And I think it aids the lawlessness that we see spreading across the country.
Oh, there's no doubt. When you don't respect life, you don't respect law. And when your government, when the plain writing of your laws are really not anything but whatever comes out of a judge's mouth, then the entire system is based upon subjectivity rather than objective law. And so, again, it goes to show you the politics of the court, which is disappointing. The chief is playing politics. I watched him play politics in 2012. Under the ACA or the Obamacare ruling that he made, where he reached way deep down in order to find some nuance to basically strike a decision that he felt was in the best interest of the country. That's not his job. His job as a judge is to judge the law and the facts. And when you go on record and say the law says X, and then you come back some 4 years later and say, well, the law says X, but I'm going to let Y stand. It lacks credibility.
It's dangerous.
It lacks judicial temperance is what it also does. It lacks complete judicial temperance, which I would have expected better of Justice Roberts.
Judicial integrity. Let me ask you this final question, General Landry. Many have seen Roberts moving into the position of being the swing vote of Kennedy. Is he that swing vote that goes back and forth, or is it clear now that he's joined the ranks of the liberals?
Well, I can tell you, if you want to do away with that, we can go and work real hard to ensure that the president gets reelected. And if we firmly put another conservative on the court, we will deleverage the chief. I think he just likes to play the politics of the court, and that's disappointing.
Fair point, and I think you're absolutely correct. One more vacancy could very well shift the court clearly into the constitutionalist column. Attorney General Jeff Landry, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for fighting so hard for that law, that reasonable common sense law.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, don't go away. Still a lot more Washington Watch to come. On the other side of the break, President Trump on Friday issued an executive order protecting public statues and monuments, including religious property. On the other side of the break, we'll be joined by former Congressman and retired Army Colonel Alan West. That's next. Don't go away. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership and Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership and love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children, which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me remind you again tonight, Arise and Stand, a special update here from our nation's capital, 8 p.m. Eastern. To register for the event, go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, I have a poll question, so stand by. You're going to want to answer that after this next conversation. Monuments and memorials around the country have found new homes, in some cases the bottom of rivers, or they've been smashed to pieces or defaced in different ways by protesters calling for revolution. Now, we need to be very careful about what parts of history we censor to avoid repeating that history. That's a part of history, is learning from it. You know, we can't choose our history. And the story, as I've talked about before, the story of the human race is not one of perfection, but it's one of redemption. And our country is a perfect example of that. The president on Friday issued an executive order protecting monuments, statues, and including in this religious properties as well. Joining me now to talk about this is a former congressman from the state of Florida and retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Colonel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Tony. Semper Fi, my friend.
Semper Fi, and I'm glad you're doing well. A lot of people were praying for you after your recent accident, so I'm glad that you are back in the battle.
Absolutely, and thanks so much for your prayers, because without a doubt, I'm a walking miracle, because no one survives a motorcycle accident at 75 miles per hour on the interstate, and I was hit from behind, so I'm very fortunate to be alive.
Well, we are grateful that you are still here and still battling for the things we care deeply about in this country, our freedom, our faith, our families. And, you've made the comment that these acts of lawlessness, it's not lawlessness alone, but there's mindlessness in this as well.
No, it is, without a doubt. And when you look at what is happening, this is the move of anarchists. And we have to stand up and say that we're not going to allow the same thing that the Taliban did in Bamiyan province in Afghanistan, or what ISIS did in northern Iraq and also in Syria, to happen here in the United States of America. And I believe that that is what people are looking for, the leadership, the resolve, the resiliency of elected officials that will say this is not going to occur. And even here in the great state of Texas, where, you know, I've been calling home for now the last 6 years, we have had to deploy the Texas National Guard to protect the Alamo, one of the great symbols of our you know, fight for independence and freedom, not just in Texas, but in the United States of America. And we have to protect it from these anarchists and from these rioters and looters.
I mean, you made a point, I think, in a recent interview where the history of some of these statues that people are tearing down are actually from the very ones who are tearing them down or something for them to celebrate.
Yes. And when I think about what happened with the memorial and the monument to the 54th Massachusetts Regiment, and for you, those that are listening, that was the unit that was celebrating the movie Glory with Morgan Freeman and Denzel Washington. And so here you have young people going out and saying that they stand for Black Lives Matter and what have you, and they're destroying the monument of the very first black men that served this country in uniform. That to me is an offensive affront to my legacy as a soldier, and also my dad who served as a soldier in World War II, and my nephew who's serving right now. So this is not about, you know, a Black Lives Matter or this theme. This is about an ideological agenda to, without a doubt, reimagine, revise, erase the history, the traditions, and the values of the United States of America.
I mean, is this not those coming behind those who have legitimate protests that are out there doing this peacefully and exploiting that and taking it to this level of violence, hiding behind the peaceful protesters, but with an ulterior motive of basically to take down the republic?
Absolutely right. It goes right back to what Rahm Emanuel once said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And so you saw this anarchist group, Antifa, which is a domestic terrorist organization, so I don't know why they're being allowed to operate and raise funds. And then you see an organization that is led by two avowed Marxists, that's Black Lives Matter, taken to the streets. They're promoting a certain ideological agenda, which is really undermining our constitutional republic. You know, I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago for CNS News, and I just asked the question, does anyone remember George Floyd? Because this has completely been lost in the transaction. And so we had the opportunity to do something about the corruption and the police that were there in Minneapolis. But we've gone beyond that. We're not talking about really what needs to be the big discussion, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, Tony, is the situation in our inner cities that have been created because of the results of the Great Society program.
Right.
When you have destroyed the black family in these urban settings, this is what you end up having. And this is just, you know, what happened in Minneapolis was just one of the offshoots. But the real problem that we need to have a discussion about is the decimation of the family, the fatherlessness that you see in the black community.
I've got to ask you this, Colonel, because there are folks that agree with every word you have said, but they're afraid to say anything because they'll be labeled a racist. And I ask that to you as a brother, a fellow believer, as a former, as both of us being veterans, two former elected officials. But, you know, as a black American, you can say things that as a white can't say. But what would you say to those who are on the sidelines, silent out of fear of being called a racist because they would dare speak up?
Because, Tony, you and I know that on the battlefield, fear paralyzes you. And when you're paralyzed and you're not taking an action, then you get defeated. And that's exactly what is happening here. So if my white brothers and sisters continue to allow themselves to be painted into a corner and you know, paralysis because of fear of being called a name, then that's how you end up losing the country. And white liberal progressive socialists have no problem going into the black communities with their poison. So it's about time that Christian constitutional conservatives find their courage. And as far as I know, the God that we serve, he said in Isaiah 54:17, no weapon formed against you shall prosper, and every tongue that rises against you in judgment you shall condemn.
I rely on that quite frequently. Colonel, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for your courage. And again, we are so grateful to have you fighting for the things we care about in this country, the things that made this country great. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Colonel Alan West. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, you know, we were told that, all mail-in balloting, not a problem, not going to result in voter fraud. Well, tell that to the folks in New Jersey, where in one city, in Paterson, New Jersey, one out of every five ballots was disqualified recently because of voter fraud. We talk about that next. Don't go away.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Not so long ago, sex education in public schools involved learning about human growth and development and listening to advice on how to be careful, respect others, and save sex for marriage. Things are very different today. Parents have two main concerns about sex ed: that it sexualizes children and that it's loaded with LGBTQ indoctrination. Family Research Council has released a new resource to address this issue titled Sex Education in Public Schools: Sexualization of Children and LGBT Indoctrination. This resource reveals troubling examples of the agenda-driven content being pushed in modern sex ed and exposes the powerful organizations behind it all. Finally, it offers some action steps for parents to consider in their fight to protect the health and innocence of their children. For more information about sex education in public schools and to view this resource, visit frc.org/sexeducation. That's frc.org/sexeducation.
All right, and I told you I had a poll question for you today, and it's in relationship to the president's executive order protecting monuments and statues, including religious properties. Do you support the president's executive order? If you'd like to participate in the poll question, text the word radio to 53445. That's 53445. Text the word radio. I'll send you the link. Do you support President Trump's executive order protecting monuments, statues, including religious properties, which he issued on Friday? Text me, the word radio, 53445. How safe are mail-in ballots, mail-in elections? Well, 1 in 5 ballots have been rejected as fraudulent in a New Jersey mail-in election. Patterson, New Jersey, saw 19% of the votes get thrown out of the city council election, and they're not the only jurisdiction. Within New Jersey, about 30 other jurisdictions had all mail-in elections because of the coronavirus, and they, too, experienced fraud. Joining me now to talk more about this, senior writer at Real Clear Investigations, Mark Hemingway. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Glad to be here.
So, Mark, is this a one-off, or do we have problems brewing?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, obviously in New Jersey, we should be, sounding up klaxons. I mean, it wasn't just that, we had 1 in 5 ballots in the third largest city in New Jersey, suspected of fraud here. The New Jersey Attorney General, who is a Democrat, brought fraud charges against 4 different people in the city, which included candidates for the city council and the current vice president of the city council in Patterson, New Jersey, for being, for participating in this, widespread fraud across the city. And it involved all kinds of things: stealing ballots out of people's mailboxes, mishandling ballots, ballot harvesting. I mean, it just was a problem across the board. But as you point out, Patterson is, one of those cities in New Jersey. It's got a long, colorful history of local corruption, and there are pockets of the country that maybe aren't representative. But there were 31 municipal elections across New Jersey last month, and in those elections, 10%, which were all mail-in elections because of the pandemic, and in those elections, 9.6%, about 1 in 10 ballots, were all rejected, which suggests that something is going on there. Clearly, I don't if that's all fraud or, just partially fraud or whatever, but we have not ironed out the mail-in balloting system in this country to the point where I think we can reliably get results, particularly if we're going to be ramping up in November with tens of millions of more Americans who've never voted by mail voting that way for the first time.
Yeah, I know this is New Jersey, and back in Louisiana, I know we had our problems, but we are always glad for New Jersey because they were worse than us when it came to corruption. But the issue here on some of these particularly, let's go to Patterson for just a moment. These few ballots made a difference because ended up with one of these elections were tied, another one just a few votes separate them. So when you have fraud in these elections, it can determine the outcome of the election.
Well, absolutely. The last presidential election was decided by, less than 80,000 votes across a handful of states, and that's what determined the Electoral College winner. When you look at, 127, 129 million total ballots were cast in that election, you don't have to have one of every five ballots to be fraudulent to cause problems. You can have a tiny fraction of the ballots being fraudulent, and you're still going to, in a close election, completely throw things into doubt. This is, again, something we just haven't put a lot of thought into. And not only have we not put a lot of thought into massively expanding mail-in ballots in this country, right now there are dozens of lawsuits across the country being filed, mostly by Democratic Party-affiliated groups that are rushing to expand access to mail-in ballots. And as part of those lawsuits, they're suing to get rid of a lot of, the security measures we have in place for mail-in ballots. So, for instance, there were a few thousand ballots in Patterson, New Jersey, were thrown out because of signature match issues, which is when you send a mail-in ballot, what happens, one of the ways they verify that it's an authentic ballot is they compare the signature on the ballot to a, voter registration card or something they have on file at the Board of Elections. And, it's not a great way to do election security, but in a lot of ways, it's the only security measure in place for balloting, for mail-in ballots. And yet there are lawsuits across the country right now to do away with signature matches.
Let me ask you about that for more. I've seen that. Why would you do away with simply requiring a signature to verify that the signature on the ballot matches the signature of the person? What's the justification for doing away with that?
Well, the justification for doing away with that is it's not a great way to do election security. People often sign things very sloppily, and, it's very hard. It's a very subjective interpretation sometimes to, compare matching signatures. It's not uncommon for ballots that were valid to be thrown out simply because the signatures didn't match.
If you didn't have that, what would you have?
Well, for instance, in Oregon, which is all mail-in balloting, they do have barcodes and other things that are in place. There are ways that we could possibly think about doing mail-in balloting that was more secure. But in a lot of places, signature matching is the only security measure we have in place, and they're trying to sue to do away with that.
Right, right. Mark, we're up against the break. Can you stand by for just a few minutes? I want to ask you one more question on the other side of the break. Will that work for you?
Sure thing.
Okay. All right. Mark Hemingway is sticking with me. I'm going to ask him another question because this is really important when you're looking at the security of elections. This determines the outcome of elections, and this is where many jurisdictions, many states are moving in this direction in anticipation of possibly another wave of the coronavirus. All right. So we're going to talk with Mark Hemingway right when we come back, and then also we're going to talk more about today's Supreme Court decisions with Travis Weber here in the studio. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right on the other side of this break.
Could you use some timely and original commentary to read this summer, specifically on the issues facing our culture today? FRCblog.com has just what you're looking for. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, members of the Family Research Council team, as well as outside contributors. You can learn about religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Check out this list of a few of our most recent titles. What Does It Mean to Be a Woman? DC Christians Take to the Streets to Sing, Lament, and Pray, and Prayerfully Responding to Civil Unrest. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and stand for truth. Our blog helps you do just that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com. On April 16th, President Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force announced a three-phase plan with guidelines for how states can begin scaling back restrictions. Churches should begin putting in place plans to reopen and operate their ministries according to the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control as state officials begin lifting orders. Here at Family Research Council, we have summarized the White House three-phase plan and how it relates to in-person church meetings and gatherings. Check out our resource, What Pastors Should Know About the White House Plan to Open Up America Again. Our resource offers practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate safely as our country reopens. Visit frc.org/church guidelines to view this resource and learn more. There, you'll also find our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus. Again, that's frc.org/church guidelines.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
All right, there's still time to weigh in on today's poll question. Do you support President Trump's executive order protecting monuments, statues, and religious properties? Text the word radio to 53445. That's 53445, the word radio. I'll send you the link to take the poll. All right, joining me by phone, Mark Hemingway with Real Clear Investigations, talking about a case out of New Jersey where last week the attorney general charged four men with charges related to voter fraud. All right, Mark, thanks for sticking around because I want to ask you this question. We were talking about the effort in states across the country to go to all mail-in, or some going to, I think we have 5 states right now with all mail-in balloting. Others, I think like 28 states have expanded to include more liberal mail-in balloting rules. But you, as you pointed out, you have states that are moving to eliminate the signature verification on these ballots. Now, let me do just a little summary here. Patterson was just one of 31 municipalities in New Jersey in the municipal elections last month. 9.6% of the ballots were rejected, as you pointed out. Now, in Patterson in particular, where 3,190 ballots were rejected, 2,300 of those were rejected based upon the lacking a signature or what appeared to be a fraudulent signature. So, in these jurisdictions where they're trying to do away with the signature, if there's nothing else in place, that means there's absolutely no effort to ensure that this is those are not fraudulent ballots.
Well, you know, I don't. You know, so the thing with mail-in balloting is the security measures vary wildly from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But in a lot of areas, you know, signature matches is the primary or, you know, only security measure for, you know, mail-in ballots. So you're getting rid of it is obviously, you know, very problematic. But, you know, at the same time, I really think the media have done a big disservice here, which is to say that if you've been paying attention to the media on any of these issues, they will tell you that, you know, basically voter fraud is a myth. It doesn't exist. And if you believe that, then why really worry about any extensive security measure, you know, anything that, you know, that requires people to do an extra step to ensure the integrity of the ballot is really just some form of voter suppression, which seems to be the attitude. And it's really sort of troubling that that is. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that most of the places where voter fraud is likely to occur or does occur tend to be, you know, big, you know, places where there is, you know, local corruption or, you know, Democratic or you know, party machinery that is inclined to do these sorts of things. And it's also the same places where they're not inclined to look into the possibility that voter fraud might be occurring. So they point to the fact there isn't a lot of, like, voter fraud prosecutions as the fact that it doesn't happen, when that's just not the case. I mean, the absence of, you know, evidence is not evidence of absence, is, you know, the typical logical fallacy that you learn in school. And that's exactly what's going on here. There just isn't a big effort to look at if there's fraud, when the fact of the matter is the people that study this stuff, Caltech and MIT, put out a joint report on voting about 10 years ago, where they you know, made an extensive point in their report of saying that, you know, voter fraud is very much concentrated in mail-in ballots, and we need to look at that. And not only do we need to look at that, we need to probably scale back on the amount of mail-in voting that we're doing and do things like expand the number of hours and days that in-person voting is open, because it's much more secure.
So is that the approach that public officials should be taking as we move toward the fall election, given that we could very well see, if not a rise in the coronavirus cases, certainly a rise in the fear fed by the media about the coronavirus? So instead of moving without the necessary precautions and safeguards for mail-in balloting, just expand the current voting infrastructure?
Well, that's one idea. I mean, obviously, local officials, you know, need to do what's best for their particular communities. But the fact is we've got to do, you know, more. We've got to do better when it comes to security for mail-in ballots, which has just been growing leaps and bounds over the last couple of decades. And there's plenty of documented evidence. You know, mail-in balloting or absentee voting, you know, to the extent that, you know, we know fraud exists, is overwhelmingly concentrated toward mail-in ballots, you know, whether it's double voting in multiple states or jurisdictions, which is, you know, something that happens, you know, often, like people that have a home in Florida and a home in New York often will vote, you know, in both jurisdictions and not get caught. You know, it's just, and then on top of that, we have this new situation here where California and other states are starting to, like, legalize ballot harvesting.
Right.
And ballot harvesting is when you get a third party that is allowed to come and pick up your ballot at your house or your place of work or whatever and collect them all at once and deliver them. And anytime you introduce a third party into that equation, you're going to get corruption. We had an election in North Carolina, for instance, overturned recently, a congressional election, because a Republican operative was engaged in ballot harvesting, which is illegal in North Carolina. But what the Republican operative did in North Carolina would have been perfectly legal in California. And the moment you start allowing, you know, union workers and Democratic operatives and Republican operatives going door to door to collect people's ballots, that's just going to incentivize fraud in a very big way. And there'll be a big push to do ballot harvesting once more and more people go to mail-in ballots.
Well, this is certainly something we're going to continue to focus on as we move toward the fall's election. And I appreciate your piece that people can read at realclearpolitics.com. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Mark Hemingway. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You can actually read his piece. And it exists. I mean, we're just looking at the facts. And you need to be paying attention to what your state is doing as it pertains to this fall's election. Some are still doing primary elections, but they're setting the stage for the fall's election, where just a handful of votes in each precinct could determine the outcome of a presidential election. It's very, very serious. All right, folks, again, the poll question, if you'd like to participate in the poll question, text radio to 53445. Do you support President Trump's executive order protecting monuments, statues, and religious properties? Okay, I want to transition back to our top story today, the U.S. Supreme Court handing down a unfavorable ruling in the June medical case. It's the Abortion Clinic Regulation Provision Act that had a provision about having admitting privileges for the abortionist. From my home state of Louisiana, we had the Attorney General Jeff Landry on at the top of the program talking about his agency argued before the Supreme Court. Liz Morrell, the Solicitor General for Louisiana, argued that case before the Supreme Court. But joining me now in studio, been patiently waiting for the entire program, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs. Travis, no question this is a setback.
Tony, it is. For those who for decades have made their pro-life views known in public policy, in politics, and for those who are part of the far-flung pro-life movement in this country, which stretches back at least into its modern iteration to the time when Roe versus Wade was decided. For all of those people who are part of that pro-life movement, consider themselves first and foremost part of that pro-life movement as their pro-life views animate their politics and their policy views, this is a setback. I mean, here what we have, as we've been discussing, is a decision on a very reasonable state law treating health and safety provisions in the context of abortion just like they would be treated in any other medically related field. And, you have the Supreme Court distorting the abortion jurisprudence, which itself is based on shaky foundations and ill-conceived right. under the Constitution,
right.
distorting that jurisprudence to uphold or to strike down constitutionally this law and uphold the shaky jurisprudence of decades past in America.
Did you ever watch VeggieTales?
Tony, I cannot say that I have. I didn't have a TV growing up, so.
Okay. Well, you didn't have to have a TV. You just had a video player. We watched them on video. But there was one called The Big Fib, and you told a little line, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And that's where I think this abortion thing is, because there's no constitutional foundation for abortion, but they keep building. And of course, the prayer and the hope of pro-life Americans is at some point, being that this has no foundation in law, it's going to come tumbling down. But when you have justices, and the Chief Justice in this case, as I asked the Attorney General of Louisiana earlier, Chief Justice Roberts in the Whole Woman's Health case out of Texas, said that it was wrongly decided and even admitted that in this case, in the Russo or the June Medical case, but yet still said, well, but we got to stick to it even though it's wrong. Help me figure that one out.
Yeah, I need help figuring it out too. But in essence, let's look at what Chief Justice Roberts tries to say in his defense. He says, well, look, I'm following Whole Woman's Health, which itself follows the Casey decision. We're not reexamining Casey. We're applying Casey here, and we need to apply it through the lens of Whole Woman's Health case. And we've not reached the level – this is in Chief Justice Roberts' view – the level of stare decisis principles requiring a reexamination overturning of Whole Woman's Health. I think it's a lot of gymnastics to reach a result that he wanted to reach, unfortunately. Who knows why exactly? But the result is one where you try to drive a middle course, please everyone, end up pleasing no one. And it's not the right thing to do even so. I mean, as we've been talking about – it seems like we keep talking about this over and over again, but we need to keep repeating it. Justices and judges have a public trust to decide the cases before them according to the text of the law and the Constitution, and merely decide the outcomes of cases involving two parties who are adversarial, and saying this party wins and why, and here's that's it. They're not to be making policy. That's what we have here. We had it in Bostick. And it's really unfortunate. But people need to reengage. There are silver linings to this case. Justice Gorsuch and Kavanaugh both were on the right side of this. Justice Thomas's dissent is stellar. So there are things we can look to here, but it's an unfortunate result overall.
I got text by my daughter. It's called Larry Boy and the Rumor Read. Weed, not the Big Fib. I guess I had the wrong title. Well, there was another case handed down today which actually had a better outcome, and that was the Open Society case, which deals with the Trump administration's policy on USAID, United States Aid International Development Agency, which provides foreign aid to special projects. This was a favorable decision. Describe that one.
It was, Tony. This one has not gotten a lot of attention, but it's in the area of policy with which we are concerned. Actually goes back to a Bush 43 era policy where federal funds were conditioned on organizations agreeing that they would not promote prostitution or sex trafficking in order to receive the federal funds. Should be common sense. It's been challenged as a free speech violation. These cases have had a long entangled history. The latest iteration, which we received a result in today, is the Supreme Court saying the federal government can put conditions on its funding when entities overseas receive that funding. There's no First Amendment protection there. I think this is a perfectly reasonable, sensible result. And here you had a 5-3 result with Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, both in the majority of this one. Justice Kagan was recused from the case. So that explains the 5-3 result. But a good, sensible result reached allowing the elected officials, the executive branch, to impose conditions, reasonable conditions, on how the taxpayer's money is spent. So a good result, and we need more like this.
Again, let me be very clear in just a few moments we have left. When we talk about a good result, we're talking about a result that is in keeping with the Constitution. And I think that's the problem on the abortion front, is that there is no constitutional foundation for abortion. It was made up. As Justice Thomas said, made up out of whole cloth, and they continue to build upon that fraudulent foundation. This is, you know, last week very discouraging with Gorsuch, siding with the make-believe side of redefining the word gender to make it mean other things. But in this case, we do see the president's selections, 2 picks for the Supreme Court that he nominated were confirmed by the Senate. Being consistent, and there's a number of reasons to be encouraged by their view on the life front. This, as Attorney General Jeff Landry pointed out earlier, this underscores the importance of the next vacancy on the Supreme Court and who will fill it. I mean, if you think about this, the outcome of this court decision today, had Hillary Clinton been President of the United States.
Tony, it would have been far different, far worse, because for all the negativity about the result, it's a bad result today, as you note, for purposes of understanding the Constitution and how it should be interpreted. There's still a lot of to celebrate here, including Justice Thomas's strong dissent. I'm actually looking at Justice Alito's dissent now, which starts with the abortion right recognized in this court's decisions is used like a bulldozer to flatten legal rules that stand in the way. That's a proper way to understand the constitutional parameters around who should be challenging these, not abortionists, but women who want to bring challenges, who are designed to be protected by these laws. And all the dissenters, all 4 dissenting justices got that right, understood that, something we noted in our amicus brief, including Justices Alito and Kavanaugh, or Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, along with Alito and Thomas. So I think there's some things to be heartened by here. We need to keep it going with understanding and articulating the type of judges and justices we need in these positions on the high court and lower courts, though.
All right. Well, we'll have more cases coming down, so we'll have more chance to talk about the Supreme Court. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
And folks, thank you for joining us. And on the way out, let me give you the results of our poll question today. 100% of you agree with President Trump's executive order protecting monuments, statues, and religious property. I am with you. I agree 100% grateful that he did it. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you could do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.